I'm speaking today with Natasha Camerani, who is currently HISD trustee for District 1. However, Natasha, you just recently announced that you will not be running for re-election this November. So, whereas I usually ask people in these interviews, why are you running for this office, I'm going to ask you, why have you decided not to run for re-election?
I guess there are two reasons, one of which is personal. I have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old, and as you know, these jobs don't pay on school boards, so I have a full-time paying job. In addition to what is, on good weeks, a full-time job on school board, and it's just hard. I mean, I've made some enormous sacrifices as a result of doing this. You know, I quit practicing law 2 years ago because it became so incredibly hard to try and maintain my billable hours while trying not to sacrifice my children and my time with them, while trying not to live up to what I promised my constituents I would do. So there's a personal component, but that's certainly not all of it. You know, in my almost 4 years now on the school board, I've had a real opportunity to see what can and can't be accomplished from a board seat. And I have always, I mean, really, I've always been pretty skeptical about whether or not the best place for me in my lifelong fight for high-quality public education for all children really was best achieved sitting at the board table. And I think around last December, I became pretty convinced that that it wasn't the best place for me to do my work at this point in time. And then, you know, you get pushed and pulled a lot. A lot of people say, please do it again. You know, I'd started having some conversations with people who I thought might, you know, want to do a good job, or who might do a good job or be interested, very informally. I mean, I certainly didn't go specifically after any candidates, but just asking people questions, and then you kind of get convinced, well, you know, maybe I should do it another 4 years. You get pressure put on you. And I mean, at the end of the day, I know there's a better way for me to attack a problem that I think is perhaps the most important nagging problem in our country today, which is the lack of high-quality public education for all children. There's a better way for me to go about getting it done than sitting on the school board right now.
And what is that way?
And what that way is still in its incubacy phase, but one of my dear colleagues on the school board has oftentimes said, you know, that one of the biggest challenges we have in public education is the public. And I think that that's indeed the case. I think that you can have 10 conversations with 10 very wise people who care tremendously about public education. And I mean, I'm talking about people who represent labor, people who are part of the business community, to, you know, moms and dads. And when you ask them to sort of focus on kids and what it takes to give kids the best shot, you get 10 disparate answers. I mean, really. And I think some of that is to be expected. I mean, of course, different people with different experiences are going to have different ideas, but in my opinion, there are just a set of core issues that we have to attack in this country to really start to change the way we're doing business. And I'd like to start an organization that is involved in educating, involved in advocating, and involved in getting in the politics of good quality public education that's organized around a set of principles that I feel like are foundational to what needs to take place. So, I know that's not very specific, but maybe in a few months we can speak more specifically. But I'm working with some people, and I think there's some real potential there.
Okay. How would you assess your term in office? If you were a voter, and you would you have voted for you again?
I would have. Well, I think it all depends on who my opposition would be. So would I vote for me again? Perhaps. But if there was somebody who was a better candidate, I might vote for them. I mean, at the end of the day, I give myself an F, Charles, and that's a hard thing to do. I mean, do I feel like educational outcomes for all the kids in HISD are where I want them to be? No. Is it realistic to say you can get there in 4 years? No. But, you know, I came into this with like a pretty fierce fire to get some stuff done, and I have found the water torture pace of change in a large bureaucracy to be maddening. I have found that sort of a shared belief, like a real belief, Charles, that kids could be doing so much better than they're doing right now. The lack of that to be maddening. You know, it's really hard to divide like what you have control over from what you don't have control over. But at the end of the day, you know, I certainly wouldn't give myself an A, and I certainly wouldn't give myself a B. I would say that in terms of caring and in terms of devoting a whole lot of my time and effort to this and working like a dog, I should get an A. But in terms of, like, do I feel like I've gotten HISD moving solidly in the right direction to the point that there's no turning around? You know, nope, don't feel that way.
Well, that's a refreshing answer, I have to say. You know, what stood in your way, would you think? And you know, what needs to be done? What needs to be done about that?
I will tell you. Like, here's something I think about a whole lot. It's where hope lies for me, which is that there will be a day coming, and I don't even know if that day will be in my lifetime, but I certainly hope it will be, where people of all colors will be reading out of history books about this horrible time in the history of the United States of America. Like, horrible, because there was a time, I mean, just this crazy time where, based on the color of your skin or the zip code in which you were born, the amount of money in your parents' bank account, like based on those things, you could pretty much predetermine the quality of education you would receive and the educational outcomes you would be able to achieve. There's like a little bit of like civil justice issue to me on this one, which is, I am a strong believer that all children are born into this world with huge numbers of abilities and capacities, and that race, economics doesn't determine any of those things. And yet, we continue to live in a country where it is absolutely acceptable that so few of our black and Hispanic children of poverty go on to college and finish college. Like, it's reprehensible. I mean, it is absolutely reprehensible that in the United States, in the year 2009, when we have an African-American president of the United States, that we are still living in a country where a kid born into a certain zip code and a certain skin color, like, you could pretty much just say, let's put some money on where this kid's going to be 18 years from now. And if you bet that they probably won't be in college, you'll probably be the winner. Like, that's nuts. That is nuts. And so I just think every day about how absolutely crazy that is. And I want to change that. I mean, it must be changed. And I want to be a part of that. And if it's not in the school district or in as part of an elected board or an elected position where I change that, I mean, then it is absolutely imperative that I find a place where I can change that, you know? And so that's sort of what I'm moving towards right now. But I think it involves a lot of tough conversations, because there's a lot of shaking up of the status quo that has to happen to get there.
Well, it's funny, to the point of incongruity, to hear someone who is stepping down from a position as an elected school board trustee say that you're fired up about making a difference in the quality of kids' education. It seems to me that should be something that's being said by someone who's running for the school board. Why is that?
Well, I mean, I hope it is something that gets said by people running for school board. I hope it is. It's what I was saying when I ran for school board 4 years ago.
Which leads me to the conclusion that what you're saying is that part of the problem is that HISD, the board, the organization, isn't able to get that done, or at least isn't doing it now.
I think that that getting to the point where we are operating with the sense of urgency, with the courage to get to get things done. I'm talking all these sort of very fluffy terms, but to get things done, you need to have the support of a community to do it. I think it's really hard to I think it's very easy to become marginalized when you're sort of talking about lofty goals like this, I guess. And I think it's really easy to not have the sorts of deep conversations that you need to have. I mean, I think school board, you oftentimes sidetracked. I mean, it's very easy when you're sitting in one of these seats, and like I said, I mean, it's an unpaid seat. If I could tell you the number of hours that I spent, and happily so, you know, worrying about and dealing with families who were nervous about the swine flu here in the Heights. You know, that is time taken away from another area that you want to drive towards in terms of your work in public education. But there is a huge amount of time that you spend helping your constituency through issues that are not necessarily germane to, like, the guts of public education reform. And so on that level, I think, you know, I feel fairly fungible. Like, somebody who's really good and kind and wants to do right by people could take this job on school board and help people, you know, get answers to specific questions about their kids. The part of the job that I like to refer to is sort of the crossing guard part of the job on school board, where you help people get from one side of the street to the other because they have questions, because their kid has special issues. I think having some freedom of my time from that sort of stuff will help me redirect some of my time to more of the guts. But you can't, I mean, you know, you can't free yourself up from that time when you're an elected representative. That's an important part of your job. I just think to sort of get to the guts and heart of some of the things that I think need to be changed, I need to be in a place where I can be more focused.
How much of the problem ultimately boils down to funding? Schools and school boards have been warning about funding problems for a long time. I mean, it's just been in the news recently that the SciFair Independent School District, which is a place, you know, SciFair is a place that people move to because of the schools, had to let go of a bunch of employees and is cutting back on school bus service because their property tax revenues are down and they can't get, you know, they could not get rid of this extra tax exemption, you know, that is costing them millions of dollars. HISD in this last cycle was being rated as a rich district and would lose money under Robin Hood. How much of the problem in HISD specifically and in Texas schools as general really ultimately comes down to not enough funding?
I think there's a qualifier to all of this, which is that, you know, I think the resources for educating children well, you know, you can make arguments that would mean you'd need limitless resources. You know, but I'd love every child to have rich enrichment opportunities where they could take Suzuki violin lessons and participate in great sports teams with, you know, top-of-the-line uniforms. And, you know, I mean, you want kids to have just a huge number of opportunities. And so the resources issue gets tricky for me. But where I kind of like to think about the state of education is that resources and needs are so different based on schools. And I was having a conversation with one of my colleagues about this the other day, which is that I mean, I'm getting a little esoteric in response to your question, Charles, so bear with me for a second, but that I think about schools sort of in terms of, like, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs is this sort of psychological evaluation of people, but, you know, I do this sort of, like, an analogy for schools. So you think there are some schools where kids are, according to our tax test, incapable of doing meeting minimal levels of competency in math and reading and the like. And so, you know, you want to direct your resources to getting kids that. You know, I don't think we think about resources necessarily in the right way. I guess that's my point, is that I think that there's a more esoteric, a little bit more complex way of looking at resources now that are allocated. But if you have schools where kids aren't getting it done, you really need to focus resources, and I'm not just talking about money, but people, everything, on sort of this bottom level tier of needs for kids. Like, resources need to be directed at what kids need to succeed and sort of move up this chain of, you know, Maslow's hierarchy, because when schools are actually getting competent at mastering, you know, the tax test, for instance, and minimal skills, well, I mean, you certainly don't want to sit there and say, well, that's a fine school then. Look, they're rated exemplary based on tax tests. No, I mean, you want to get to the point where you, all of your schools are sort of reaching this point of, you know, Maslow's hierarchy, it's self-actualization. For me, it's a school where the kids are coming out ready and able to take advantage of the widest number of opportunities possible, right? And so the way that we appropriate resources, the way we think about resources, it's sort of one size fits all right now, but I think there's a more complex function to it, and until we're like really thinking about resources as they tie to specific needs that kids have, It's always been real tricky for me, and I think that should be a dissatisfying answer to a whole lot of people, because it's such a non-answer. But it's because I just think we think about the system of public education in such a strange way. The more satisfying answer, I will tell you this: I had a colleague who the other day said, you know, we're pushing more money to the school level, and she said, you know, I'm horrified because I'm afraid I'll drive around my neighborhood and I'll see more really fancy marquees put up in front of schools. You know, meaning that you push money down there, and when you do get more money to the school level, is it going towards anything more than the fancy new marquee, or is it going towards something that's actually going to be substantive to the kids? You know, I mean, it's the.
Speaking of the tax tests, you know, HISD recently got an evaluation based on the No Child Left Behind law that showed more schools were, you know, unsatisfactory or failing than had been rated by the state of Texas. What's up with that?
Wait, the federal government?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think it's because we have so many different standards in place. So you have a set of standards for Texas. You have the Then you have some federal standards. And what Abe Saavedra mentioned is something that I agree with, which is that this, to me, is just a call for national standards. Like, it's really impossible to both be, well, it's not impossible, it's all based on standards, to be both great and to be awful. But the truth is certainly somewhere in between, and it all gets alleviated if we could just say, you know, this is what we as a country really believe our kids need to know at certain grade levels. This is the level of growth we expect to see out of kids and out of schools, and just get past this. Because this conversation does nothing to enable people to have a better sense of how their education system's working. It certainly doesn't do that.
I think the argument a lot of people would make against that is that there's this idea of that local control is better, and if it's all coming down from the federal government, You lose that. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I mean, I disagree because I guess I'm seeing a federal government right now whose education agenda seems to make such good sense to me. So, you know, maybe I'm really, really hopeful for once that we've got somebody who's really somebody in place as our president and our secretary of education, who I think are driven to prove that that we can be so much better than we are right now. So I suppose I have a level of trust right now in our federal government that leads me to think that a national standards move would be incredibly beneficial.
Superintendent Saavedra will be stepping down on August 31st. How do you assess his time in office, and what would you like to see from his eventual successor?
I mean, certainly with Dr. Saavedra in office, we've seen some real advances in our outcomes for kids. So that, to me, is kind of the proof of the proof of any man or woman's mettle when it comes to public education is to take a look at the kids and see how they're doing. And I would say that across HISD, our kids are doing better. And they're fortunately better on the CACS test. I think that's one of many measurements of a healthy school in a kid's life. Our graduation numbers are going up, which is huge. We haven't started tracking it, which is really a problem. One that sticks in my craw of us not measuring the number of kids who are going on to and getting through college. But, you have this sort of gut instinct that at least there's more conversation going on about it, which is good. As I look around HISD District 1, my district, Sam Houston High School, there's new life breathed into that school. Jeff Davis High School is a recognized school. We have schools that are just chock full in this district, which means people are excited about the schools, staying in the schools. Here in the Heights where you and I live, we have people who are on waiting lists and enroll their kids in paid pre-K programs. That is certainly one sign of health. And so, the superintendent's been there through all of this, and I think we're moving in the right direction. Where we are with the superintendent search is a tricky place.
I want to interrupt you to say that I'm one who thinks that the search should be done more in the open. I disagree with the idea of keeping the candidate's identity secret.
I know you do, because you're a journalist, and of course that's what you're going to think. And you know what? I sort of intuitively do, too. There's a part of me that says, well, my God, what business of the public should ever take place outside the public eye? We should work so very, very, very hard to make sure that we are constantly pressing ourselves to be transparent. I get it. I totally get it. But I also know that bottom line is my job, the biggest part of my job, our job on the HISD school board is hiring a superintendent who can run this district well. I know that. And I know, number two, that there is not just this limitless pool of great people to pick from. There just isn't. And so you want to make sure you have as big a pool as you possibly can. And the only way to keep that pool as big as you possibly can is to be able to guarantee confidentiality to some people. Because, I've heard Jason Spencer at the Houston Chronicle's arguments for why it should be open. Because if you've got somebody who's great, and they look at their board of trustees and say, by the way, I'm going to be going to interview at HISD, that if they're great, their trustees ought to turn around and go, well, wait a second, we're going to give you a huge raise and we're going to try and keep you. But that statement alone, I think breaks a bond of loyalty and that people have in jobs. I don't think it's realistic to think people can look at their bosses and go, hey, you know what? I love it here. I think this is a great place, but I'm really interested in going and checking out, how the water looks over there. And if I come back and it doesn't work out, it's just going to be the same way between us. I think it's unrealistic. And I know you're going to have kids in our district next year for the first year. And I know you want us to have the best superintendent we can possibly have. And I'm going to assure you, as my constituent, that the best way to ensure that that happens is to have some confidentiality in this process. I'm not trying to mess with you, Charles.
No,
I'm trying to hook you and your kid up.
All right. I appreciate that. How would you assess the bond... bond referendum that was passed last year, amid some controversy. How has the construction programs related to that? How's that been going?
These bond programs take a while to unroll, as I'm sure you can imagine. We're talking about a whole lot of money and a whole lot of construction and a whole lot of parts of the town. Clearly, you don't need me to relive history, but it was not an easy election. And as I've just described to you, when I talk about HISD District 1, I was out visiting a school 2 days ago that is over-enrolled by about 200 kids, has a parking lot for, you know, 83 teachers, and has 100-plus teachers there as a result of being overcrowded. So we have situations where we have some schools that are exploding, and we have situations in other parts of town where we have schools that are less than half-enrolled. And so the bond, you know, presented us with some tricky issues because nobody ever wants to shut down their school. But what does happen when you, you know, are spending money on air conditioning and heating for campuses where lots of the community is walking away, or there's no community to fill those spots. And so a lot of what we dealt with the bond, a lot of pushback was concerning the consolidation and closures of some campuses. So that's part of it, but there are, in Board Member District 1, several new schools that are going to be built and have been desperately needed. I mean, Roosevelt Elementary School on the north side of town is an old building that's just never, I mean, it's just been in terrible shape, and so that community has been needing a new campus for a while. We're starting some of the work from the bond program. Other work is still waiting to be done. I know that there are a group of parents now at Hogg Middle School, right in the middle of our neighborhood, who are pushing hard to get some work done over at Hogg a little bit faster than it's calendared to take place.
So far, there is one candidate set to run for your seat. She had announced before you announced your desire not to run for re-election. That's a former principal named Alma Lara. I presume now that this will be an open seat that there will be other candidates as well. Give me your opinion of Ms. Lara and, you know, the possibility of other candidates.
I know Alma Lara from 1 year where she and I overlapped, where I was on board and she was a principal at Kettleson. I believe it was 1 year. And I think she's a nice woman. And I mean, I've said this to her, that I think she is a nice woman with a good heart. I think certainly no personal issues with her. I know that she was running against me, and so certainly some of the principles that I have believed in, talked about, things that I've thought, the way I've handled the office, perhaps, not even perhaps, but clearly, are things that she has disagreed with. And so, she's running on some things that I don't agree with. I think one thing I've realized is that doing this job well requires being an independent thinker. And I worry just the way that this whole race was set up with Alma getting the early backing of the Houston Federation of Teachers, which was done sort of as a response against me, that will lack a little bit of the independence that I think is so important for people to have when they take these seats. I've had other people express some interest in the position. I'm not going to name any names because that's their job to name their names and decide when they want to be in this race, but I have talked to other people who are considering it very seriously.
If there's one piece of advice you can give to the person who will eventually succeed you, what would it be?
A piece of advice? Gosh. To never be satisfied. Because between where we are and where we need to be to fulfill what I think is such an important part of our democracy, which is a well-educated citizenry. There's just so much space between where we are and where we need to be. And I think it becomes very easy when one sits at the board table to become an apologist because you so desperately want to feel success. And And we do have success, but it's just, right now where we are in our history of good public education for all children, we're just so early in that place that you can't lose focus. I mean, you just can't lose focus, and you can't spend too long patting yourself on the back, because by the time you stop patting yourself on the back, you've graduated a whole other class of kids without the skills they need to be the successes they very potentially could have been. So.
All right. Natasha Camerani, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.